Brian Clough's American Connection.
It comes from Mississippi and down in Alabama, creeping like a fever all across the land. From deep in the Delta on the Louisiana shore, the people got to have it, they want to hear some more. It's a hillbilly rock, beat it with a drum, playing the guitars like shooting from a gun. Keeping up the rhythm, steady as a clock, doing a little thing called the hillbilly rock. Some say it came from Memphis, down in Tennessee, or it drifted in from Georgia about 1953. Just as long as it's breezy, as long as it's fast, as long as it's pumping, honey, it's gonna last. It's a hillbilly rock, beat it with a drum, playing them guitars like shooting from a gun. Keeping up the rhythm, steady as a clock, doing a little thing called the hillbilly rock. Way back in old Kentucky, where the bluegrass grows, up the rhythm, steady as a clock, doing a little thing called the hillbilly rock. So when the heat starts to rise and then you gotta pull some steam, take a ride down the river, you'll see just what I mean. The juke joints jumping when that cat goes on, the whole place is shaking, there's a something going on. It's a hillbilly rock, beating with a drum, playing them guitars like shooting from a gun. Keeping up the rhythm, steady as a clock, doing a little thing called a hillbilly rock. Doing a little thing called a hillbilly rock. Doing a little thing called a hillbilly rock.
That's Hillbilly Rock from Marty Stewart, and welcome to the American Connection Country Music Show with me, Brian Clough. As usual, nice to have the pleasure of your company. And we've got the company of someone special on today's programme as well, in so much that the guy that you've just heard is Marty Stewart. He's our special guest today. Welcome aboard.
Brian, it's so nice to be on your programme. Thank you for having me.
Was this a bit of a change in career for you, Hillbilly Rock?
That was the record that gave me an excuse to finally get a bus and a band that I could pay for and some cowboy clothes and run around the world and do what I always dreamed of doing. So I will always owe Mr. Paul Kennerly a debt of writing that song and giving it to me.
Let's go back to the days of Mississippi as a child. What sort of memories have you got of that?
Well, Mississippi was pure fun. I mean, as a young musician growing up, Mississippi, when you go across the state line, it says Mississippi, the birthplace of America's music. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that can be backed up. It's amazing all the people that came from there. Elvis Presley, Muddy Waters, Tammy Wynette, Charlie Pride, Howlin' Wolf. I mean, Jimmy Rogers, the father of country music. On and on and on and on and on.
So, I mean, were you listening to artists like this as a child?
Well, I was listening to my local radio station, which is a tiny radio station, but their programming was kind of like this. They came on the air every morning with country music, and at the noon hour, they played an hour of Southern gospel, and the afternoon was dedicated to rock and roll and top 40, soul music, and late night was dedicated to easy listening classical. So I thought everybody had a station like that. But out of all of those genres, I was like a sponge. I listened to everything, but it was country music that touched my heart the deepest.
So when did you actually start playing guitar or mandolin or whatever?
I started my first band when I was 9, so I must have started playing guitar when I was about 7, maybe.
And the songs at that particular time, and who were you listening to, you would emulate them, I suppose.
The first two records that I ever owned in my life was a Johnny Cash record and a Flatt & Scruggs record. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, it was pretty musical around the house, but I started collecting country records early on. Mm.
Now, if I mention a name like the Sullivans, it sounds like a TV soap opera, doesn't it? But, I mean, it means more than that to you, doesn't it?
The Sullivan Family Gospel Singers were Pentecostal church house bluegrass stars in the American South. Mm-hmm. And they had a little local television show in my region. And so they were very popular on the church house circuit and the bluegrass festival circuit. Mm-hmm. So they were the first people that I went out and toured with when I was 12 years old, and I got to kind of see the world that summer by way of the Sullivan family.
Yeah. I mentioned before that we've asked Marty to pick some special songs, something that means something to him. So let's take the first one in. And I found it an unusual choice for you. It's an instrumental, and I remember these guys from Walk, Don't Run. Tell me why you picked Adventures and why you picked that song.
Well, as a kid, buying my first electric guitar, Walk, Don't Run was a very popular song at that time. And the Ventures always had cool album covers with, you know, girls in bikinis and go-go girls. So that, of course, got my eye as a young guy. And I thought, oh, if you play the guitar, you can have girls that look like that in your world. I thought, I'm going to go try that. But the Ventures were, I think the thing that was beautiful about them, and we have tried in the Fabulous Superlatives to stand by this very standard, is like we try to write guitar instrumentals that are fun to play, first of all, that a kid getting his first guitar can play, but at the same time that have enough, you know, integrity about them that you could play with the London Philharmonic if you wanted to. But the Ventures were the first guitar band that I ever kind of set my eyes on, and one of the songs that took my captivated my attention was called Pipeline.
That's Pipeline, one of the choices of a special guest today, Marty Stewart. Now, through the years, you started off with the Sullivans. They were very helpful to you, I understand. And then you moved on to Lester Flatt. I mean, those must have been special days for you.
They were. At the end of the summer of 1972, I had worked with the Sullivans all year long. And Brian, that summer I discovered applause. And you get paid a little bit of money for playing music. And as I said, girls thought, you know, the boys that played music were cool.
Yeah.
And I got to hang out with people like you that, you know, live this stuff all day long. We talk music 24/7. And the traveling, I love the sense of motion.
Really?
Always going somewhere.
Yeah.
So when it was time to go back to school, the Sullivans dropped me off at my hometown, and I thought the circus had left me and stranded me. And I couldn't stand it. At night, I'd try to do my lessons, and I couldn't concentrate because I knew the band was somewhere playing without me.
Yeah.
So I basically got kicked out of school about 2 weeks in, and I called a fella who I'd met on the circuit named Roland White. And Roland played in Lester Flatt's band at the Grand Ole Opry. And he had made the casual comment, someday you might want to come to Nashville and ride along with us for a weekend. So I called him and said, this would be a good weekend for me to come up. So I begged my parents for just a weekend to go to Nashville. And so I'd been traveling, so they kind of understood the lifestyle.
So I take it they were very supportive then of what you were doing.
They were. And I think my mom and dad always knew that, you know, I could stay in Mississippi and do something that I wasn't supposed to do with my life or go out into the world and try to figure it out.
You then, of course, moved on to other things and worked with Johnny Cash.
Lester,
how did that come about?
Well, Lester passed away in 1979, so I had like 7 years in his band. And as a young musician, I was looking around Nashville going, what do I do? So I almost went to work with Bob Dylan. Mm-hmm. There were a couple other people I just kind of thought I might play music with. But then I walked into a guitar shop one day and saw a buddy of mine building this pretty black guitar. I said, who's that for? He said, Johnny Cash. I want to go with you when you deliver it. And I kept up with the progress of the guitar. And the day I met John, he kept shaking my hand going, where are you from? I went, Mississippi. When I thought so. He said, where you been? I went, getting ready. And about 3, 4, or 5 weeks, I don't remember, later, I was on stage with Johnny Cash. And it was like tying on to a cyclone because we went across the world then.
Was that something that perhaps you naturally never, ever forget, but was that one of the greatest buzzes that you've had?
One of the very best. Because going back to when, you know, the first record, being oddly enough, the first only two jobs that I ever had in my life was with Lester Flatt and Johnny Cash. Yeah. That was the first two records. But I was standing in front of my aunt's stereo in 1968 and just listening to the radio station, the same radio station, down in Mississippi. And the announcer said, here's Johnny Cash's new song. It's called Folsom Prison Blues. Yes. And it was from the live at Folsom Prison Blues. And when that song started, it was like somebody reached out of the speakers and put their arm around my neck. And I remember I had goosebumps on my arm so big. I was mesmerized by that record. And I thought, I have to know about this. And the Johnny Cash show came about 90 miles away from my hometown, maybe a year and a half, 2 years later. And my mom took me and my sister to see it. And from the minute he walked out on stage and said, hello, I'm Johnny Cash, I went, that's what I want to do with my life, right there. So that record means a lot to me.
That's your second choice. Let's take it in.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. I bet there's rich folks eating from a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. If they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
Yeah. Johnny Cash, of course, and I mean, not only did you work in Johnny Cash's band, but you married his daughter as well for a while.
He was my father-in-law for 15 minutes.
So, I mean, we've got a third choice here, which is rather unusual, was when I saw what you'd picked anyway. It's the Rolling Stones. Why the Rolling Stones?
Well, you know, when they call, well, it was called the British Invasion, right? Mm. In the early 60s, when all the guys from over here were coming to America and causing so much, hoopla. And I thought the Stones, I didn't get into the Stones too much later, but I just remember hearing from people in country circles what, how they were, affecting music, this good or bad. Everybody had an opinion.
I was going to say, what was the reaction to the Rolling Stones? Because even over here, we had mums and dads who were none too keen on what they were doing and the music.
Same here. Well, it was the same, with several of the bands. Remember, I think they were just misunderstood, and they were so different. And they just pounced upon American culture and unapologetically. So I think it scared people. Mm-hmm. But after I've got to know those guys, I'll go back to a recording session called the Bradley Barnes Sessions. And that was in the 90s when all the country performers were paired with George Jones. We all went and sang a duet with George Jones. Well, Keith Richards came in. Mm-hmm. And he brought a song called Burn Your Playhouse Down, which is one of the more obscure George Jones songs. And by the end of the day, I understood that Keith Richards was one of the greatest country fans and greatest country guitar players of all time. And if you look back at the Stones catalog, things like Wild Horses, things like that's as country as it gets. Jumpin' Jack Flash, if you were put it on country radio today, it would probably be considered a little too country. Mm-hmm. So the point being is that I think that the Stones have a lot of country leanings. I know they were influenced by a lot of country people down through the years, and I just happen to be one of their biggest fans.
Yeah. You just mentioned modern country today. I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, you can't argue with kids that are filling up stadiums and, filling up coliseums with listeners. They're not doing anything wrong. I think sometimes the definition country is becoming broader and broader and broader. My fear is that perhaps the authenticity will be, disappear somewhere along the way. But I've explored every bit of it down through the years, but I tend to stay close to the roots, and I think that's the timeless place.
Do you think perhaps music is a bit like fashion, that it comes in, it goes out, and then it comes back again? Do you think we're going to have a resurgence of the way country music used to be?
Well, that's fine with me if it does. But again, if you go and stand by, the bedrock of country music, where the roots are, to me it's the empowering place. And it is beyond trend. It is beyond, little things that come and go, parades that come and go. And country music, I think from its inception in 1927 from the Bristol Sessions forward, has always wanted to be a part of pop culture. Yeah. That can be traced. And country music to me is at its very best when it is unapologetic and doing what it does that nobody else can do. But the other side of that is that I see country stars on red carpets now at Hollywood premieres. Mm-hmm. The shootings in Las Vegas this week, that's so tragic. But that's a big part of being a part of the pop mainstream.
Yes.
Those kind of.
Of course, that could have happened anywhere, I suppose.
Of course.
Couldn't it?
Yeah. It could. Yeah. And the thing about country music is, though, I always believe in the tried and true things. And a lot of these songs we're playing today may be a bit old-fashioned to some people, but they're the timeless ones.
Let's take the Rolling Stones in before we forget about them, eh? Rolling Stones and a song called Gimme Shelter. Marty Stewart's my special guest on today's programme, and we've also, going back to the era of the 60s, because one of your favourite songs is from the Beatles as well. Now, what impact did they have on you, or on music in general, do you think, in the States?
I got the album Meet the Beatles, which I think was the first American record. And actually, I gave it away.
Really?
And I asked for a Jimmy Dean record called Big Bad John. I traded for that. And I met Ringo one time, and he asked me, he said, who did you listen to growing up? I said, well, obviously, you guys, but I gave your record away. And he said, well, don't worry, the rest of the world kept theirs. But the Beatles, and the next song we will play after this, perhaps, the reason I chose that song for your show is that after I got to know some of the Beatles, and I knew all of Buck Owens and the Buckaroos guys, they were both on Capitol Records from, you know, different parts of the world.
Yeah.
But I know that the Beatles were big Buck Owens and Buckaroos fans.
Yes.
And then they could act naturally, I think.
Ringo
did. And if you listen, and when that happened, if you listen to Buck Owens records, a little bit, it went from being more of a fiddle and steel kind of outfit to a twangy, you know, guitar kind of outfit. The fiddle kind of went to the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose I Want to Hold Your Hand because it is that kind of same kind of record that Buck Owens made. It is a 2 minute and whatever second cheeseburger that pops out of your dash, and it is instant hit, instant likability. And that's the kind of records that Buck Owens started making, I think, after he and the Beatles listened to each other. And the Beatles, on the same hand, in their early days, again, it was a guitar-driven kind of thing. And I don't think there's a lot of difference in Buck Owens and the Beatles.
Let's take a listen. That, of course, is Wanna Hold Your Hand from the Beatles. Marty Stewart is a special guest now. Singer-songwriter yourself, Marty, how would you rate Lennon and McCartney? I mean, what always crosses my mind is, how do you write a song called Help? Now, you've come across songs in country music, the likes of Crazy, and perhaps even songs that you've written yourself. What defines a good songwriter, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I think songwriters kind of have to go through the fire of the test of time. And there's been a lot of time now since those songs that Lennon and McCartney penned And they don't ever seem to go away. They seem to always find a new audience. They always find their mark in a new generation of listeners. Mm-hmm. And just as far as the way they were crafted, they're absolutely exquisite pop songs.
Mm. We've had the Beatles. You mentioned Buck Owens. Let's take that one in from Buck Owens. It's called Sam's Place.
There's a place down the street we call Sam's Place. It starts a-jumping every evening when the sun goes down. You can always find me down at Sam's Place, for that's where the gang all hangs around. There's old Shimmy's shaking Tina. She hails from Pasadena. She's always got a big smile on her face. There's old Hoochie Coochie Hattie. She comes from Cincinnati. Yeah, there's always a party at Sam's Place. Well, they've got a swinging band at Sam's Place. You can hear them picking 20 blocks away. They're playing country music down at Sam's Place, from the setting sun until the break of day. There's old Shimmy's shaking Tina. She hails from Pasadena. She's always got a big smile on her face. There's old Hoochie Coochie Hattie. She comes from Cincinnati. Yeah, there's always a party at Sam's Place. And I'll meet you tonight at Sam's Place.
That's Sam's Place, another choice of Marty Stewart and Buck Owens. Why that particular song, Marty?
Well, Sam's Place to me is just, it's Saturday night music. It's that nobody could come close to putting a smile on your face out on the west coast of America like Buck Owens and the Buckaroos. Mm-hmm. I just kind of, in a fantasy world, think about them coming to a blue collar working town where people have been working hard in the factories all week or whatever their 9-to-5 jobs were, and they needed a place to just cut loose on Saturday night. And the band that could absolutely help them cut loose was Buck Owens and the Buckaroos. Pure fun.
Yeah. So was he a hero of yours?
He was. The first song I truly ever learned to play on the guitar was Tiger by the Tail.
Really? And I mean, that was popular over here as well, you know, long before anybody over here knew what country music was. And you mentioned before, Jimmy Dean, Big Bad John, was a hit in 1961. I think it was number 2 here in Britain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, country music has crossed over the years. It looks like we've sent music back to you as well sometimes.
You absolutely have.
Yeah.
But some of the country guys that actually, as you say, worked over here, you know, I know Johnny Cash always had an audience mm-hmm. here. Buck Owens and Jimmy Dean, as you said, George Hamilton IV had listeners here. And I'm sure I'm missing several people. Yeah. But those guys seem to have a global reach.
We've got the Glasgow Bluegrass coming up right now. Bill Monroe, of course. Why this particular song, The Voice from On High?
This is a very haunting gospel song to me. Bill Monroe comes from the state of Kentucky, the father of bluegrass music. And this is actually a song I played at my dad's funeral. Mm-hmm. And it calls from the deepest part of the heart and the deepest part, and calls down, you know, the tones of heaven, the ancient tones. When I come over to Europe and I travel through the country, beautiful countryside today, and go in to here to Scotland, to Ireland, I just remember that, you know, America's still walking around in diapers. You guys have, you know, you've understood the beauty of your land and your castles and your fences and your people. And this song sounds to me like it could have come from the earth over here.
Savior has paid need to meet him when he calls on that day. I hear a voice calling, it must be our Lord. It must be our Lord. It's coming from heaven on high. I hear a voice calling. He died on the cross, the old rugged cross, that we would be saved from sin and not lost. So follow his footsteps up the narrow way, and we'll pay our debts on that great judgment day. Hear a voice calling, it must be our Lord. It must be our Lord. It's coming from heaven on high. I hear a voice calling, I've gained a reward. I've gained a reward for the land where we never shall die.
I've got to, at this particular point, mention congratulations to you, because Connie Smith and yourself, husband and wife, have just celebrated 20 years of marriage a couple of months back, was it?
Oh, July the 8th.
Yeah, and you've picked, naturally, one of Connie's songs. Tell me about that and why.
I love Connie's voice. She was my mom's favorite singer. Mm-hmm. And this particular song, Connie had, she is a just like a once-in-a-lifetime kind of singer. Oh, George Jones says she's my favorite vocalist. And I think, who was it? Dolly Parton made a great comment one time. She says, there's only three singers in the world. Said Connie Smith, Barbra Streisand, and Linda Ronstadt. And the rest of us are just trying. That embarrasses Connie, that comment. But there's a lot of truth in it. Yeah. But this particular song is from her RCA catalog. And it was written by a fellow named Cy Coben. And it just has a little extra touch of class on it. I love Connie's voice on Burning a Hole in My Mind.
Though it happened long ago, the hurt just won't let go, and it's burning a hole in my mind. I see her and I see you, and the things we used to do, and it's burning.
Burning a Hole in My Mind from Marty's wife, of course, Connie Smith. Now, apparently it goes in history circles, I think, that when you were with Mum one time and went to a concert, you said, I'm going to marry that lady. And, of course, that was Connie. Is that right?
Back in the days of Mississippi when I was growing up, she came and played a fair at my hometown. And I was 12 years old. And she came and sang, and it was a big day at our house because Connie, you know, like I said, was Mom's favorite singer. And we just loved her recordings, and I had her one of her records. I put it up on the stereo. I thought she was so pretty. Yeah. And on the way home that night, I remember saying to my mom, I'm going to marry Connie Smith one day. So, like you said, we're 20 years into the deal now, you know.
Imagine. So what sort of advice would you give to, say, a 12-year-old or a 16-year-old or someone who has a great interest in music and Marty? What would you say to them about the life and about how to go about it?
Well, Brian, I think the main thing I would say is we all start by looking at other people, and we're influenced by other artists or songwriters or actors or magicians, whatever. We're all influenced by other people that kind of help us find our way to our own gifts. But at some point, I think the magic really occurs for people when you kind of forget about everybody else and follow your own heart at any cost. We don't need any more of anybody else out there. We need all these young folks that are playing, and I love them. Connie and I support young artists, and we applaud them and encourage them. But the same advice we give every time is that follow your heart. Be who you really are. Be who God intended you to be. It'll all come out okay.
Your last song here is from your latest album, actually, Way Out West. Tell me the connection between the last two albums, in fact, being about West and cowboys and Indians and whatever. So why?
Well, I'm fascinated by the American West. It's such a different kind of, it's almost a different universe from the southern states. And I love the romance of the West, the cactus and the landscape and the cowboy lifestyle. And all the things that have come from California, it's a very cool place. Yeah. And the song Time Don't Wait, as you say, is from the Way Out West record. But and a perfect example is we've been in your country now for 5 days. Mm-hmm. We left Nashville last Sunday. Mm-hmm. And everything was just fine and normal when we left. And I turn on the TV one day and we see what happened in Vegas, as you said. And then the next day I find out that my pal Tom Petty has passed away. So the truth is, time don't wait on nobody. And I think the bottom line is, while we have each other, we need to love each other and appreciate each other and respect each other, and because we never know.
Was it someone in Tom's band who actually produced this for you?
Mike Campbell, the famous guitar player in the Heartbreakers band, produced Way Out West for us, you bet.
Desert sand. I reached down, touched the earth, and held it in my hand. As the dirt fell through my fingers, the wind did seem to say, don't put off until tomorrow what you can't do today. That lit up the desert sky. A pillar of fire from east to west came slowly drifting by. A voice from the cloud like thunder said, start looking for a ride to where yesterday meets tomorrow. That'll get you to the other side.
Time no wait on
Just to wrap this up, you've been interviewed so many times over the years. You had your own television show and whatever. If you could turn the tables, you could swap positions with me, say, who would you really want to talk to? Who would you love to interview?
Past, present, or future?
Any. It could be a writer.
Well, I would love to sit and I wish I could call from the past Hank Williams. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that, you know, as time goes, I think he's like Shakespeare. I was told this place that we're playing tonight was modeled off of Shakespeare's theater. Is that correct?
Don't know.
Well, I think so. And I think Hank Williams was a very simple country boy. They tell me he read comic books.
Yeah.
He didn't read deep literature. And I own some of his manuscripts. I own his handwritten manuscript from the day he wrote I Saw the Light and Your Cold, Cold Heart. I used to own Your Cheating Heart. Mm-hmm. And the words are misspelled and the penmanship is, you know, very elementary. But boy, it was the gift that poured from his heart that has reached out and touched us for, you know, years and years now. So I would love to sit and talk with him.
Shall we go out of this with a Hank Williams song, then?
You choose it.
Right, do that. Marty Stewart, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Brian.
Say, hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me? Think maybe we could find us a brand new recipe. I got a hot rod Ford and a $2 bill, and I know a spot right over the hill. There's soda pop and the dancing spree, so if you wanna have fun, come along with me. Say, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
Connection.